first time chairing this, and I've been on another committee, so I feel like I'm the new kid on the block here. Everybody else knows what's going on, and I don't, so just feel free to step in if you feel like I'm doing something wrong, okay? I'm gonna have everybody introduce themselves, I think that's always helpful for members of the group. So, Henry, let's start with you.
Awesome. My name's Henry Walden, I work at Dixie State University as the Assistant to the President for Government and Community Relations.
Hi, everyone, my name is Sheila Bozapari, and I'm a student region this year.
I'm Lee Watt, and I'm new, 2 months in, provost at the Public Health Service.
What's your first name?
Wayne.
Wayne.
Bob Grant, Region.
Liz Hitch, Associate Commissioner for Academic and Student Affairs, Pat Jones, Region.
Trisha Beckman, Grant Communication Specialist at Objects Arms.
Nina Barnes, Region.
Jeff Lambert, Council of the Board.
Denise Hutchell, President, Salt Lake Community College.
Julie Hartley, Assistant Commissioner.
Frank Haley, Provost, Utah State University.
And we are live streaming, just to let everybody know, so it's always nice to know if there might be people listening. So, we have some exciting things, I think, you know, coming up. I feel kind of a renewed energy, I don't know if you've all felt it in the last couple of days. It seems like we're going in some new, interesting directions, and some clarifications on some of our roles, which I think have been very helpful for myself, and I'll speak for myself. So, let's start with the first item, and it has to do with a little bit of background. Commissioner Wilson has asked that each region committee define the work of the committee, so we're going to be talking about that a little bit today. And it really is a great opportunity to understand the legislative mandates, but also the rules and regulations that are relevant to this committee. And it's the office of the commissioner that will actually support this work. So the staff has prepared a draft of the committee's work for this discussion input, so I'm going to turn the time over to Associate Commissioner Hitch, who will do a brief overdraft of the drafts and describe the schedule for the board. I think you've all had that new schedule. At least I have it online, but I'm not sure what times they are yet, so we'll decide what that is. And then we'll just turn it over to Liz, if you don't mind.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jones. But one of the things that triggered this work, just so that you can see it in context, is when it was determined that we were going to have a third committee, which we have not had for some time, which we lovingly called the WAH committee.
WAH.
Oh dear. I don't think they might be crying. I don't think they're crying. I think they're going to be very helpful. The WAH committee. It seemed like it would be a good idea. They were developing a description of what their work would be and how they would, what topics and issues they would be taking up, and it seemed like it would be a good idea to have a similar description for each of the committees. I think it's particularly helpful just because, again, some of what we do is in statute, and it's important to know what we're directed to do. Part of why Jeff is sitting here, make sure we get that right. And some of it is in our region policy, what we do and how we do it and so on. And so it seemed really wise to have a general overview of what the committee work is, and then as new members join us, we have something to be able to share with them and so on. So it's not a policy draft, but it is a nice draft to direct our work. So let me share with you what we've put so far and are looking for input on. We're charged under board rules to help in meeting statutory requirements around academic program quality, college preparedness, degree pathways, student progression, equity, and inclusion. And so those are sort of the main conceptual areas we're dealing with. Under statute, we are required to look at institutional missions and service regions and ensure quality of academic programs within those missions broadly. So I'm still on the first page, kind of lightly hitting each of the numbered topics there. Number two, provide system leadership on statewide college preparedness. And you can see that includes also work with the Utah State Board of Education, our liaisons there to make sure we have some seamless pathways. The state scholarship programs fall under that as well. Under number three, the quality, efficiency, and transferability of degree pathways. So in statute, our concurrent enrollment is one of the things we deal with here. Learning opportunities across campus, including new modes of delivery. A lot of that has changed over the last 20 years, pretty radically, with the advent of technology to help us do our work. Credit transfer and equivalency, that's been a very important topic to Regents serving on this committee prior to this restructuring, and we still have some members who have been part of that discussion. Number four on the next page, making sure that students have efficient and effective progression to completion so that we get to awards, not just partly there, as all the data show. If we don't get them all the way to some sort of completion, we really have not helped as much as we might have. And sometimes it's just a few things that we could do that make that happen. I've listed some of the immediate priorities, and one of the things that we are so close on, but we just have not had a chance as a office team to work on together and make sure we've got it lined out right, are all of the tasks that we're doing for the transfer and articulation. So we weren't prepared to give that to everybody just yet. It hasn't been vetted with the commissioner and other staff members who might have input, but it's very close and it'll be ready to go the next time. So that'll be a top thing where we want to share exactly what we're doing. But you can see that the top three items in the immediate priorities are around transfer and articulation. The Regents Transfer Council, the Transfer and Articulation Guide. I signed the contract the other day with the provider. That was a long process to get to the correct provider that'll work for the institutions and to line out where the dollars were going to come for a three-year contract with Academy One. So we're prepared to do that work. Yes? Got me.
Yeah, questions? Can you just add on to where we are, just so the committee knows where we are with the Transfer Council?
I think it would be helpful to give a little bit of background for those that are here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Including myself. Catch up. To kind of just explain what that is, what your objective is, and
how that came about, maybe.
So maybe you'd like to do that, Regent Barnes. You know it as well as I do. The Regents Transfer Council really came out of the work of this committee and was an idea of how to facilitate the work of transfer, make sure that we're working on the right topics, and also to provide a court of last resort on transfer issues. So that if there were inter-institutional uncertainties about how things should be, there was a place to go to get those resolved and to make sure that we had all the transfer lined up in a way that made sense across the system.
Transfer credits.
Right. So part of the reason that we haven't talked a lot about the Regents Transfer Council beyond the direction that we got initially for it is it's in the new transfer and articulation policy that you'll see at the next in-between meetings and then at the next board meeting, if you're ready to approve it. So the Regents Transfer Council, how it's going to work and where it's going to be and all of the other things are going to be in policy, and they'll be in this new R-471. Previously, all our rules about transfer and articulation of credit were in R-470, which tended to focus more on general education transfer. And as we tried to put all of the material into 470 that dealt with transfer beyond general education, we decided that didn't make any sense. And so we're going to have a pull-out policy recommending to you that you consider a pull-out policy, R-471, for transfer and articulation, where all of that will be laid out, both for gen ed and for ed. other courses.
And I think part of that came from, there's been lots of conversation as among presidents about a system-wide kind of authority to help ensure that transfer articulation is actually being accepted. And sometimes faculty need leverage, well, sometimes presidents need cover for on faculty to say, we have to take this credit. And over some, we've been pretty good at the state, and then it kind of started to erode a little bit. And one of the recommendations from this group of subcommittee was, the system really has that statutory obligation to be monitoring and saying yes or no to things. And so the Transfer Council, I think, was designed as a body under the regents that would have that authority to say to presidents, you got to take this credit, or we got to make this happen. And even common forms and common ways of codifying things and common, and right now there's a lot of MOUs happening, handshakes in the back office. You know.
Who's on the Transfer Council?
I think the composition was recommended, but it hasn't been.
It'll be in that policy for your approval.
And Chair Simmons and myself with Dave will kind of sign some of those open spots.
Yeah, there's some open spots.
In the policy are, so we're working on that. I just want to mention one thing on this, just to tag on to what Denise is saying. Is this a ball for the new members? Because I think Regent Prince, you're new to this committee as well.
A returner.
A returner. You're back with us. But what we realized after all these couple of years of talking about this transfer problem is we saw a national statistic where Utah's ranked very, very low, like second to the worst in the country. It was very low. So some people will argue that data, but hopefully we'll get some data from Carrie Main now that can be our own, and we can embrace it. Right now, that's the number we have. And so, it wasn't 19%, I think, is the graduation rate if you transfer once in the system. And so, that really made us refocus and look at, okay, if we're that low, who's number one? Well, it was Washington State. And what is Washington State doing? And so we looked to best practice and said, let's see. And so we've kind of implemented some of the things we think that has been done so successful. So that's kind of, is that accurate? And how we kind of got here? It was a windy road. So we feel like we're on the way to better practices and implementation.
And Jessica at UVU, your community college,
yes,
came from Washington State.
Yeah. Right.
She's very knowledgeable about how that system created a better transfer path.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure we recommended that she be on it.
Well, yeah.
And she was actually on the task force that went behind a lot of our transfers.
And while we're giving credit, Slick was also, Jeff Ayer at Slick is the first
and Rachel Lewis.
They have a group who really, with some of us regents, just was very pointed and said, this is systematic, this is not an institution problem, and we heard that and have really, with staff, owned this as something that only the system can do.
Mm-hmm. So is the council's work completed, or are you continuing to work brand new?
Oh, we're starting a brand new committee, and we are just now appointing people, the members. Some is policy of who's going to be on there, and then we're filling that with regents and other folks, with staff and the W. But we're really excited about it.
Yes,
it's been a ton of work.
It'll be fantastic. The behind the scenes work is just getting the policy in place that it outlines all of the recommendations, make sure we have it the way you want to see it working, and that will happen, as I said, over the next two meetings that we have as a committee, and we'll be ready to say, yep, just like this, it'll work like this, here it is in policy, and then we'll really get rolling it. In the meantime, Julie has taken all of the different things that have come up through the various concerns, and as we've been talking about the Transfer Council, and has begun to outline a rather ambitious, but doable, pathway for us to get those things done. So we have...
Simultaneously with the scholarships.
Yes, she's taken on a lot. She's really going to be one of our leads for transfer and articulation. We needed one person, and
as we reorganized the office and outreach and access got more integrated with the rest of us, Julie agreed that in addition to the scholarship study, she would be our point person on transfer and articulation.
So it sounds like this is, you know, ready to go. Who is it? What responsibility does our committee have over it?
Okay, so you mean over the transfer and articulation?
Who will be people on the council?
So I know that Richard Barnes and Chair Simmons have had conversations with the interim commissioner about this, but it'll be laid out in policy how that happens. And we've got it drafted in a way that we think it'll work, but we want to be sure that we run it through the committee process and be sure we have your input before it becomes set in stone for how that's going to happen. And Jeff's been working on it with us, so we'll work. We're getting closer. We got a little, I'll just admit, we got a little distracted when we got a new boss and we had to change a few things. So we had a few work tasks that we were trying to do to build the foundation and get ready to do this work. So that's a little
Are there any other questions from the
Well, and if I'm understanding your question appropriately, Regent Jones, it will have regents on the transfer council. It will also have people who are in the meetings with transfer issues like registrars and other folks, at least the way it's being conceptualized now. So it'll be a mix of people with different types of expertise. And are we modeling, or are we filling those spots after what Washington has done? Is it similar to the way they structure?
I cannot remember the way Washington structured their council. I know we're stealing a lot from their policy.
We have used a lot of what we know from what's worked for them, but their system is structured differently, and so we've had to make some modifications that account for that, because they have a separate community college system.
Do you imagine that the transfer council, I imagine they'll have a chair, that chair would report to this committee?
That's the way the recommendation was developed, so that's how we're writing policy.
And then this committee would be able to react to create helper, right? Create recommendations for, or answer to recommendations from that group. And I would make, I don't know what the composition's being considered, but I'd make a friendly recommendation that you tap Teresa Tyer and bring her back, at least for a year. Because she's that former regent who was really getting into it,
yep.
Was really helpful, but has turned out. I don't know if you have an ex officio kind of
Maybe
person.
We have a citizen member.
I think it would be valuable input if you could have her even for a year if she'd do it. Because yeah. She really, well, she and I both did a lot of research, yeah. But she was really involved. Yeah.
She'd do it.
Yeah, I think she'd do it too. And we have taken
I think she misses us a little.
Oh, I'm serious.
She'd be a great member.
So, Liz, will that come in front of our committee then at our work meeting next time?
It will.
So the draft is done, we will have a chance to see that.
You'll have a chance to see it at that work meeting, and then if you're ready, right. Moving on for the September work meeting. Okay.
Thank you for that. Basic.
Thanks for
my last
note. Well,
Is it in policy that the student regents sit on that committee? And if not, can I request to sit on that committee?
Can make sure that I think it's student.
No,
that's great. Okay. Be careful
when
you ask for it. The Patriots are not all the committees. Yeah.
Yeah.
We want that
great.
That's critical.
Great.
Yeah, I like that.
All right, so
can I just ask, sure. Some of these, when you look at the 1, 2, 3, 4 under this committee's work, it feels like some of these also now move over. When the workforce committee emerged, you've got scholarships under this group, but you guys are also looking at it under your group. Is that workforce committee scholarships?
Workforce is looking at the access part of scholarships, and then the finance and facilities committee is looking at affordability. So all the different groups are having a part in the conversation about scholarships.
But this one talks about conduct a state scholarship study doing too much work.
Right.
I thought you just said that was under the workforce.
So the state scholarship study, Julie, is heading
up. Oh, it's not under that. Okay.
Yeah.
But that committee's participating in this committee's participating on it.
Okay.
So can I make sure that request of mine is on record?
Yeah.
As far as getting Carrie to get, every time I say the number,
I know Dave B. was uncomfortable with it, so it'd be nice if we had some Ushi data of where really are we on the transfer piece, because it's out there nationally. But what's the figure?
The number you're quoting, 9A, is the number of students with associate degrees who transfer successfully and earn a baccalaureate degree in a particular period of time. That's the number. Mm. So if you just say, how many students transfer, you can have a big number.
Yeah.
You can be a lovely number.
Yeah.
98%. How many are take 7 more years to graduate?
Yeah.
So you can't just talk about transfer. You have to look at, is that an equal transfer? That's what that is.
And for those of you who weren't here for the long and torturous conversations about transfer, there's a huge missing data piece there. Part of the reason why we're implementing a new transfer guide is so that we'll have better data on which courses are not transferring well. Because right now, our analysts have to go through and look at things by hand. Pull the data and look at it by hand, and with the new improved transfer guide, we'll be able to run reports and figure out exactly where our glitches lie. So I think it's number 4 in the chain of dominoes that has to happen as part of all the transfer bases.
And how deep a dive is that into the transfers? Is it not just that it transfers for general credit, but that it transfers per course, per the major, even minors? That is a huge problem.
Yeah.
Should I walk them through all the 8 different steps?
Would that be helpful? Yeah. Because we've got that pretty well outlined, and maybe it would be helpful to hear what Julie's got planned.
So step 1 is to update the transfer policies by September 13th. Step 2 is to implement a Regents Transfer Council by October 31st. Step 3 is to communicate students' options for prior learning assessment and its transferability to the legislature's Education Interim Committee on November 20th. That's in response to a new state law. Step 4 is to expand the Utah Transfer Guide by May 1st. So part of that transfer guide process is pulling data from all the different institutions, and then the web developers are putting that into the system. Once that's all in place, that can be updated regularly, but that's a big data lift going forward. Step 5 is to address lower division program alignment. So how well, so credits transfer, but do they count towards your degree? So program alignment is seeing whether it counts towards the degree. In the top transfer majors by June 30th of this year, that requires multiple meetings of the faculty of all the different institutions to get everybody on board with lining up the degree requirements.
And is that in the process?
That is, it's actually starting when the semester starts in August, but it'll take us a while to get
so those people have not been identified yet.
They are part of what we call the majors committee or majors meeting. So there's faculty representatives from each of the institutions, but mapping out where the problems are and how to fix it, it will take us an academic year.
Let's just stop for a second for just brief. The majors, because I think this is really critical, this is where the on-the-ground curriculum work between institutions occurs. We have 31 majors groups. So it's by discipline. Some of them are combined because they're small. But the English faculty send representatives to the English majors meeting. And in this case, what Julie's outlining is we have 5 majors that are huge, you know, at every institution. Tons of students are psychology majors. We have some really high priority majors as well, like nursing. And in those programs where we have high numbers of students or have huge workforce needs, we're trying to get the program requirements lined up in those first years so that they don't transfer to another institution and find out their credits are over here in this bucket of no counts. So the majors meetings are where that on-the-ground work happens. Greg Benson runs those. He has huge charts that show what counts for what where, and our transfer guide will help you with more of that.
And some of that work, obviously, we're really involved in this because we're to your school and our students need to go. The majority of our students go to the U. And so Marty and our folks in the U have been working for the last 2 years and have actually done a lot of work on those most popular majors between our institutions. So some of that work has happened already, but not necessarily with UVU and Weber.
We should use those as foundations for.
We did the whole social behavioral sciences. Now we're doing business. We're just, and Ruth and I are doing, I mean, the faculty can meet, but And there's residents in the Pecos, they do it. I did have.
Yeah. And they're having a meeting between SLCC and the U of U on August 12th, where they're talking about these issues. Jessica Miller from our office will be there, and she'll be bringing back the information for Greg to use in the makers' meetings and other types.
It might be a helpful foundational issue where
to start from.
For sure.
Yeah. And then, simultaneously with that, we have two institutions, Salt Lake Community College and Utah State University, that are working out general education pathways through a competency-based delivery model. This is where students work at their own pace through the materials. They have multiple needs of assessments. And then when they demonstrate competency, they move on to the next step in that course. They are developing these pathways on behalf of the entire system, so the students at all the institutions will have access to competency-based general education pathways. So these are rolling out this fall. The first cohort of students will be going through them. We have to figure out, in terms of policy, how to get access to those pathways to the students at the other institutions. So we'll be working out the policy issues and the financial compensation for the schools that are providing the programs to the other institutions. So we're working on that one simultaneously. We hope to have that part of the project fully in place by June 30th. And then we are also starting this fall. But it will take us a while. We're designing the implementation plan for the use of the state student ID number that will be used across the system.
Thank you, Carol.
Yes. And we are also going to be eliminating deviations from general education articulation. Sorry.
Can we go back to the ID?
Okay.
Tell me what that is.
Oh, so we have a state law that requires the State Board of Education to use a single student ID number to identify students, so that if they move between schools, it's still the same ID number that follows them. That state law says that we need to be using the single student, state student ID. I always get confused about what the SS and SSID stands for, state student ID number. But to use the same number across all UC institutions will require a huge shift in our data systems, and it will take a while to get that implemented. So that's what the single student ID number is. That will help us track students as they transfer, so we can tell where they're running into problems. Right now, our analysts look them up and see if they can match them at the new institution. It can be very cumbersome, so this will help a lot.
It's going to be growing pains and difficult.
Yes,
it
will.
Once we get there, we can actually.
Frank?
Have we, getting the SSID, I don't want to get the weeds too far, but have we made any progress on some sort of articulation with the K-12 system so that those numbers can travel through us? Because that's been a problem for us as well.
Yeah, in theory, they come with the students on their transcripts, but some school districts are better at that than others. Yeah, we're working on kind of sharing with USB kind of future incentives. So there's, and Carrie May will be heavily involved in that part. So data heavy.
We were hiding behind FERPA for a while, but we have to, we're FERPA too.
Yes.
And so we're all part of the state system, so I have this as well.
And FERPA, for people listening in, is the federal privacy laws about student data. And you are allowed to share student data between educational entities if there's an educational purpose for doing so. Otherwise, you cannot share student information. Final phase of the project. Sorry.
Before you go on to that next, how much identifiers are included in that with transferring back and forth? Is it just simply name, SSID, or is it their whole
academic history?
Academic history.
When a student enrolls at an institution, the institution has a lot of data on that student. They have their name, their address, usually their birthday. Oftentimes, our institutions have their social security numbers. I don't think the State Board of Ed is allowed to collect their social security numbers. The state ID number is a different number.
Just thinking 185,000 students, that would be a tremendous data load.
Yeah, it's going to be a big project.
It is a big project, but you know, you can't answer the questions that you have if you don't know what happens to students between educational entities. You can't answer transfer questions. You can't answer how did they do in high school and did that help them do well in college. You can't answer just a multitude of questions that are important to improving the system for students.
Yeah.
We don't know when they transfer.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this yesterday. That's how they do it in Idaho. And they have all that data from kindergarten till when they graduate college.
And I was with legislators yesterday who are wanting to implement, you know, they didn't even realize we already had it for us, but that K-20, K-16.
It's in statute.
Yeah.
It just doesn't
happen. It's a conversation that either we need to lead out on or someone else might lead us.
So we are leading out.
So does that information include the transcripts?
When students transfer, their transcripts follow.
But we've had a real, what Frank's alluded to is for years, all of our outreach, we've used contact information for students to say, you know, come to our registration center or whatever. They didn't let us have this data something. So all the institutions, public ed, so all the UC institutions, if they wanted to do outreach, had to buy lists from the government, from ACT basically. We had to buy lists to go after our own students. It was like, it was really ridiculous. And it was an interpretation of a law that how it looks for everyone.
And now there's a new state law that will let you buy the data. The final phase of the project, step 8, is to eliminate deviations from general education articulation. So right now, all of our institutions share general education categories. Some courses at some institutions are coded to be a different general education category than at other institutions. And so when a student transfers, that course might not fulfill the same general education category they thought it was going to do. We know it happens. We hear about it anecdotally from time to time, but we don't have a good way of identifying exactly which courses are causing problems for students. Once we have all these data pieces in place, the vendor who is building the transfer guide for us has already started identifying some of those glitches and is giving us a list that we will be able to identify. And that's why it's last on the timeline, because we need the data pieces in order to pull up that piece. So there are multiple parts to transfer, but we have set a goal to have most of these addressed, at least the implementation plans lined up for various pieces by December 20th, because I wanted the holiday break.
Does the transfer guide provider, Liz, are they connected to Transferology or whatever that means?
No, it's a different vendor.
So those are two different systems that are going to, I don't know what the transfer guide is going to do. Is it an electronic guide?
It is an electronic guide. We've had one for a number of years. We just haven't had one that is two different things. One is it hasn't been sophisticated enough in some ways, and the other is the institutions haven't all provided the data that we needed to make it run. So now, the rubber's meeting the road. We're going to have a system, and everybody's going to contribute to it.
Which will be essentially the policy that will be coming before you in September.
So then to report back, we'll be saying we should have this all in place by December 20th.
December 20th.
It's a lot of work to do, but
it is
ambitious, but it's organized in a good way. I think we've got it lined out in a way that it can happen, and a lot of it will be triggered by your consideration of the new policy during our working meeting and the next meeting.
So all I can say is I used to watch Teresa just be so nervous and frustrated for so long, and I'm like, what are you worried about? Now I know why.
I was in another committee.
Well, if it makes you feel better, the hard part of addressing transfer for most state systems is getting a common core summary system in place, where all the courses in a particular major share a number that's the same from institution to institution. We've got that part, and really that's the hard part. So these other things compared to that stuff are not quite as bad.
So you guys have done a yeoman's job on this. Wow, I'm impressed. Thank you for bringing me up to speed.
So we just had a couple of other priorities here. We kind of stalled on transfer and articulation, but Julie mentioned number 4, the competency-based general education programs available to all. So she mentioned that as a part of the timeline of what is happening with transfer and articulation. Prior learning assessment is another thing that was mandated in statute, that we have a system for doing that and for helping students utilize that system. And
That is also underway, so that's one of our priorities that you'll start to see during this year. We do have to report on how well we're doing on that on November the 1st, I think. So it is one of the other things, one of the other moving parts that's happening was we're preparing for the legislative session.
That one, I'm very unclear on how that will be done.
So
you have a fairly clear idea.
So I guess it depends on which person you, with whom you speak. The chief academic officers have talked about this to some extent. And we already do this in some cases. If you think about the exams like CLEP and IB exams and AP exams, they're really prior learning assessments that get translated into credit. So if we think about them as a model, you know, then you can start to say, okay, how do you build off that model? Now, the thing that's tricky is oftentimes prior learning assessment happens through a portfolio assessment. That's a much more complicated thing than asking the student to sit in a room and take an exam and you take their score and tell them what credit they got. So that is a little trickier. Some of our institutions, SLCC is one of the lead outs on portfolios, but portfolio assessment for credit that transfers is where the trick is. And it's just not going to be something that happens like that. But if we can get definitions in place, get everybody to agree on those, share best practices on how to do portfolio assessment so people feel confident that the portfolios are being evaluated appropriately, and then get the credit transcripted wherever the portfolio assessment is occurring, then I think we're good to go.
It strikes me that we, I guess I wonder if we, so we're moving forward with PLA and doing some pilots this next year with some of the programs will occur, makes a lot more, it's more concrete. But I wonder, if the students got it transcripted on our transcript, and they transfer, and it's transcripted as credit, why would the receiving institution even know that it was a portfolio assessment? They shouldn't.
They're not by law supposed to know.
Yeah, so I don't get that, because I think they need to be involved in what we make sure we do. But I feel like it has to be portable, otherwise we're just messing with students.
Yeah. Well, and right now some of the institutions mark it differently and they don't give it the equivalent of a course. And so we need to fix that with policy.
So we actually have to probably assign a course
equivalency to it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. The other part on our PLA wish list, I don't want to get too far into the weeds, is if one institution has already done the hard work of developing a portfolio assessment for a particular class, we don't necessarily need the other institutions to go to that same level of work. So making that possibility of assessment available across the system is something that we're also focusing on.
Are there some that have done more of that work than others? Some institutions?
We're just starting.
Yeah, and it's course by course. So our first step with PLA is identifying what's already out there.
All right. So prior learning assessment, then concurrent enrollment. One of the things that we know is key to student success starting in high school is if they take a concurrent enrollment course. And so having that course schedule and availability working well for students so that they can really take the courses that they need. It's also integrated a little bit with the scholarship study work, because the New Century Scholarship doesn't have any rails around it, and students end up taking what they need for an associate's degree, but then ending up with too many credits that get transcripted, and then their financial aid is affected, and there's some real negative consequences to that. So we're working on concurrent enrollment, high impact. So we have a good start with Sid Brewer, who's our director of concurrent enrollment. And Carrie Main has gotten involved to some extent so that we know better what's happening there.
Okay.
Anything else you want to add to that, Julie?
Yeah, it's creating a way for the high schools to identify students who should be in concurrent enrollment. so that they can reach out to and invite the, especially the students from underserved populations who might not realize they could be taking concurrent enrollments. So we're identifying those students and actively reaching out to them to get them to participate.
Chair, it seems like, and this is anecdotal, but it seems like the people that I've talked with, whenever the discussion of concurrent enrollment comes up, it seems like the weak link is in the counselors in the high schools, the K-12 people. Is there, how are we integrating with those efforts and our efforts?
So the Utah College Access Advisors, which is one of the key initiatives that's emerged from the regents in the last 6 to 8 months, I think, and is probably going to go forward as one of the asks of the legislature, is our answer to that. That really is putting an on-the-ground person in every high school tied to a local institution who can really help that student see what they need depending upon what pathway they're thinking about academically.
So that's what you guys have been doing while I was in the finance.
The data dashboard will also help too, because counselors are over, they have too many students and not enough time. So the data dashboard will help you make that process easier for counselors too.
But if we could actually get a college access advisor in every high school that's structured in the way that the first 33 are, that would be the most effective way to get that particular thing to happen and many others. So
that's kind of just one more question on that. And that's, I know Tammy, right, we're out of the governor's office, at one point talked to me. They had some concerns about concurrent. I'm not sure exactly. I didn't get into it. And we reached out or pulled her in the conversation. I don't know if this is addressing it or what the concern was, but that
was
might be
ever brought to my attention.
Worth a conversation just to see what she's hearing.
Sure.
Considering that.
She's here today, maybe.
Yeah, I see what the issue is.
Yeah. All right. Quickly, in last November, as the board was considering the policy changes about diversity in the UC workforce, one of the efforts that came forth, actually out of a faculty interest, faculty/administrator interest, was the idea of having a UC Women's Leadership Exchange program. And I gotta tell you, Nancy Haup from Dixie State and Jesse Hill from UVU have pulled out all the stops. I can hardly keep up with them. So you're gonna get a invitation, Regents, to come to the very first gathering of the protégés in August. There are 20 now, and we have a whole set of mentors. We're doing a mentor-protege matching, and there's a mentor course on Canvas if you're a mentor. There's a protege course if you're a protege, and so there are all the materials they've put into place to support that work, and we really have 23 very excited women from a variety of different levels of roles and all the institutions participating in that. So first cohort ready to go, and lots of help from colleagues actually around the table who agreed to be mentors and assist with the work. So it's going to be pretty exciting. And then we mentioned the state scholarship study, and we're in the midst of the final work on, we haven't finished that mental health region policy yet, right, Jeff? But we're close, so that'll come before the committee as well very shortly.
Is that board ready to be announced at this meeting? That committee?
I know it's very close.
I think.
Spencer, do you know whether all of the names are in on the mental health? They have a meeting set, so I think that's all set. The mental health, the group that's working on the mental health institutional plans, that's all set.
Yeah.
people are...
There's a task force, they've met a couple of times.
Yeah, that's all.
Does that come under this committee?
It does.
Okay, so will we have a report?
Was that the group that was kind of charged to resurrect the original committee and keep thinking about shared services?
So they actually ended up with a charge of trying to get the institutional plans done in a way that was consistent and everybody was at least addressing the same categories of concerns that came from the regents. And so they've been doing that work. So people on your campus who are involved in developing that annual report are working together with others across the system.
Right. I think that's enough.
We're going to run out of time.
Yep. Are there any comments from the group here?
Just a quick question. Can you tell me the timeline on rolling out the mental health initiative as outlined in number 9? When is that policy going to be? When's the draft going to be available? And when are we going forward with it?
Policy guru?
We've got so many policies going. Can you tell me that?
I think it's next time.
By November.
I would anticipate you'd see that in the September. In this committee.
Yeah, so hopefully, ideally, then it would come to this committee for the third meeting to get on the September one. We'll circle back. If that timeline changes, we'll let them know.
So, are there any questions, anything that's been missed in here? It seems like it's pretty comprehensive, but anything you'd like to see added? Are we where we want to be?
These are the right things, I think. It is a very ambitious set of things, but they're all things that are important to be working on. I would, you know, just in watching my staff work and so on, this is ambitious. It's doable. We've got a lot of hardworking people that can prepare the materials that you need to take into consideration. But I'd sure need to add one more thing. I must say, it feels a little overwhelming. You know, like we've got a plan and we're working on it, but it's an ambitious plan. Okay.
So then I think then the next steps would be that you would take, unless we have additional, you know, questions or something to add to it, that you would take this and you would do a final draft and present it.
Certainly do that for the working meeting. Give you a final draft. And
so we're not going to have a working meeting until after session.
Actually, we are. We had a lot of the Academic and Student Affairs Committee has always had a between board meeting, and but we were on a different schedule than what the one is that's proposed under this new organization, which is on Fridays. So we maintained the one that we had on August the 16th, which would allow us to do the preparatory work for the September 12th, 13th board meeting. Until we get into our regular schedule. So that's the one artifact meeting where we have maintained that. And we were waiting for the final committee list, and I don't believe Trina's done this yet, but we're happy to send out Outlook invites for those alternate meeting dates. So you'll see. But one that's off schedule is August 16th. Then we'll get on the schedule.
Okay, do you know what time it is?
We normally were meeting in the afternoon between 2 and 3:30. So I'm assuming that's still what's happening on August the 16th. Let's see.
It would help to know the agenda for that meeting. So, I mean, if it's going to be, I don't know if you still need input from people at that meeting. You know, if you're trying to get done.
To see if you want to check in.
Mm-hmm. Or send someone to send it. Well, do you know what the action will be in that?
No, because we wait until this meeting's over before we develop
that
agenda.
Okay, so when that agenda is built,
okay.
If you just send that out, the date and time, that'd be helpful. You think it's 2 to 3:30?
It doesn't look right. It looks like that's actually a Friday, so then it would be between 10 and noon. So we
stick with what the
future.
Stick with the future ones. I think that's what that should be.
The future meetings, will they be?
They will always be on a Friday.
Friday.
And they always be at 10 to noon.
Okay.
And then they're trying to book in them other meetings, committees you might already have. Consolidate meetings.
For people that have to write.
It's this one.
And Liz, I'm looking at your calendar, and I don't think you can do it from 10 to noon.
On August the 16th?
Okay, we'll work on
that.
Yeah, we'll
sorry.
Come back. That's we'll okay. Come. We can work on that. You'll send out
I can't.
All of us. Oh, we need to put that. So in the interest of time, and I know this because I asked about the questions, we need to cover a couple of other things. We need to identify the two regions represented from this committee that will be part of the State League Scholarship Task Force. And I really think we need to be on there, so absolutely, we have Sheba recommend that and see if everybody would agree with that. And I think Nina would be another good selection, but I certainly want feedback if anyone else wants to fight for that position. It will be intense because it's a weekly meeting on Wednesday, several meetings in a row. That's what you can agree to.
And I forgot to mention in the big meeting, we will be setting these up virtually so you don't have to come in to Salt Lake for those meetings.
Which can be really important for a few of us.
Yeah, I'd be more than willing to help, but I've got a conflict until November on Wednesdays. After November, I could be some use, but not
that. And I know it's sooner than
November.
Yeah.
They're going to finish their work in November, so
if it was to continue, though, I'd be delighted to help with that. That's an important area that I have some interest in, but the conflict is, can't undo it. Until November 1st.
Michael jumped in, and Julie doesn't mind me to say this, but Dave Wilson, you've got some concerns about the schedule, so we're going to probably revise
that. Okay,
a 3-hour commitment per week, you know, is a lot.
That's a lot.
So we'll keep you notified. We don't want that.
Well, I put 3 hours on the staff calendar to save the time, but I was going to pull the committee members to
we've got.
It might not be 3 hours.
We're going to have a conversation among staff first just to make sure we don't.
Yeah.
So I think in the future it's helpful for when we do have positions like this to be sure and let me know if you're interested in serving, you know, on these different subcommittees. Really helpful. But is everyone okay?
Yeah.
Regions. Okay. Thank you. Let's move on to the last one, which is the Title IX Climate Survey, and to do this, we're going to have Jeff Ladward give us background on it and have a discussion.
Thank you, Regent Jones. So just it's quick background, about a year and a half ago or so, the Board of Regents passed a policy on student safety. And among other things, one of the things that it addressed were climate surveys. Now, for those of you unfamiliar, Title IX, which is the federal law that governs discrimination based on gender, has schools conducting campus climate surveys of their students to determine if students know where they can go for resources, if they know what to do in case they are encountering discrimination or sexual assault or something like that. And so in general, just to get an overview of how students feel about safety on campus, how they understand what they can do and what the steps are, what the resources are available to them. We get pretty pointed questions about their experiences with sexual assault and things like that. Now, across the country, schools are doing this, and one of the things that we thought would be helpful was to have a climate survey at all our schools happening at the same time every other year. And so that's one of the things that the policy required. The policy also requires that those climate surveys have a set of common questions that all of the schools are asking the same way. The thinking was, well, as an assistant with the Board of Regents, are we getting an accurate picture of the climate across the system? And it would be hard, I think the thinking was, it would be hard to determine if we had a real sense of climate across the system if people weren't asking the same questions. So we started working down that road. We had a set of common questions identified and we were set to do the first climate survey last year. That got sidetracked a little bit when also we had the requirement to do a survey for mental health, you know, out of the mental health task force. And in some scheduling with the CSAOs, the mental health one went before we actually completed that one. And you know, we got the data yet, we know what's coming. Anyway, so we restarted the work on the climate survey. Now, as we started working with some of our data scientists who were professionals putting together these survey instruments, the concern came up that even if you're asking the same question, if it's in different survey tools, those different survey tools can have an impact on how people are answering that question. So they were saying, if your goal was to have comparable data across the system, using different surveys themselves and just sticking some common questions in those surveys would have an impact where you couldn't statistically say you're comparing the exact same data. Their suggestion was either use the same survey itself or just let the schools tailor their own questions that work for those schools and then determine if we're getting an accurate enough picture or the regents are satisfied with the type of picture the students are getting across the system. So I asked the schools through Greg Benson and CSAOs, asked for some feedback from them about what their concerns would be about using a survey instrument that would be the same for all schools. We had in mind something like the survey that was developed by the American Association of Universities. They developed a survey tool that, in fact, the University of Utah has essentially modeled. Pac-12 uses it as well. And it's a pretty comprehensive tool that's free to use for any organization that wants to use it. So it'd be something like that. Some of the schools responded that they would rather that they are able to tailor their own questions. The rationale behind that for those schools was primarily they felt like the circumstances in different schools within the system can vary so much that it would have a much different impact, for example, differences between a school that has a lot of resident students versus a school that's primarily computer like some community college, and that they would like to tailor some of those questions in the context of those differences among the schools. Some schools said that they were kind of ambivalent, it's fine. Other schools that did a response. So based on the mixed reviews and from our office, our view is all we want to do is make sure that the regents feel like if you want to have a sense of the system-wide climate for student safety, that we can get that through the schools doing their own climate surveys, but not necessarily with questions that we've developed as a system. So I don't have, as you see in your action, I don't have a recommendation from the office other than to give you the information, to let you know what the thinking was behind it. The problem is, we can't just leave it as it is now, because the policy does require common questions. It doesn't require a common survey. And so I think if the regents wanted to go back and rethink how we want to word that policy, I can make that change. Or if we'd like to do a common survey, we also have to tweak the individual policy. So I just want to bring that in for a discussion of this committee. And start that process, and then we can expand it to the full regions as you feel like you have a recommendation.
I'd like to call on President Coughlin, because I think it's important for that. And has the Council of Presidents discussed this?
Not recently, I don't think.
We brought it up as an item, but
I think the problem, if apparently we were one of the schools that said we don't want to use your survey, we want to use our own. And I think that for us, I can only speak for our college, we do a climate survey every other year that is very comprehensive. And it's looking at a climate across campus that has to do with race, gender, sexual orientation, religion, and it gets into sexual, Title IX issues, sexual assault, sexual harassment, gender discrimination. So we don't like to over-survey our students. So our idea was that every other year we want to do this full comprehensive and then we pull out pieces and deal with it through the President's Committee on Diversity and Equity or our mental health and counseling. You know, we pull those data points apart and go to work. So we wanted to just give us the questions, we'll insert them, and we'll do it as part of our wider survey. I think, I asked Jeff, what was the intent of the Regents? What do you want to know? And I think what you want to know, you want to be sure that we're all paying attention, I think, to those issues on our campus, and what's the prevalence, and what are the resources, and how our students report. And I'm not sure we could give you that through independent surveys.
Yeah.
I think we could, but I would have to ask my colleagues to, if we could all show you what we do and what we ask and what we give you, maybe that would help the Regents understand whether, no, that's not enough, we want you to do this, or, okay, we could probably get what we want from that data.
Denise, how do you think your survey would be different from, say, Dixie's or University of Utah? How do you think your questions might be different?
Well, residence halls is a big deal. So where we don't have residential living,
sure.
They probably ask questions about physical spaces they don't feel secure in, maybe.
They do.
They ask that, okay. So I'm guessing they ask about housing and maybe returning to Greek life and where these things are occurring. So there's some physical differences because it's student. But I don't know that we couldn't pull that info for you collectively as presidents and help you see what we're
covering. We have the same issue because we have typical residential campuses, but we also have campuses that have those commuters. So we do use the UC questions and we incorporate them, but we also have our own baseline questions that we'd like to ask as well, related to timeline, sexual misconduct, some of those issues, some of them stemming from issues that we don't need to go into in detail, that predated this related to one of our programs. So we worked with the DOJ to make sure we were getting some additional questions asked. So we've got a really nice baseline from 2017, and this will be our second survey that we send out in 2019. We would certainly be on board with trying to do whatever we can to reassure the Regents that we are paying good attention to this, but by the same token, we'd like to be able to use this benchmark, this baseline, to track progress. Like I said, we do use the questions. If there are some standard set of questions that we're missing, we'd like to know that. But we'd sure like to avoid over-surveying our students as well. Now, we do use a separate climate survey related to all things, I'll say equity, EEO, Title IX, whatnot. But then we have other surveys we do. We try to minimize that because you probably know as well as I do, students at some point, they just go, la, 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 I'm done with the surveys.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask, for those that have a survey, what does like the participation look like on those surveys for your student body? And then do you provide incentive to complete it?
I don't know the number off the top of my head, but we just significantly increased our student population respondents. We just did it this spring.
Okay.
And we did huge incentives. And I can't remember the response, but it was strong enough that we can make statistical inference.
Okay.
So it's the same with us, and I don't know the numbers on the top of my head.
Can I just
please
share some ideas that I have as a person who's worked in this industry for a lot of years? They're absolutely right. It's really difficult to compare, but the other concern I have, if you do one for everyone, I think it's uncomfortable for our presidents to look up on the screen when they show those comparisons. I don't want to get into that. Because I think it's much more suitable and we get the same information if we can share but not compare common questions. But it sounds like what we need to do is change the rule where you have to have the common questions. So really that's what we're talking about. Regent Prince, what do you think? Do you have a thought on whether we should do the system right? I don't know what the objective would be, frankly.
Well, I think President Huffman's question of what is it that we're really trying to identify here? What information do we really need to glean? I think that's where we've got to focus. And if we simply need to monitor each institution that they're doing something to identify it, I'd say let them do it wrong and be happy with it. If it's something that's more of a legal situation where we've got to standardize it, then I can understand that. see reason for them, but I'd be tempted to sway towards letting them individualize it for each institution.
I feel similar, because as you stated, I think, especially when I've taken the surveys, they do ask a lot about residential spaces, and oftentimes when we talk about Title IX things, it is related to those kinds of situations, and it would be hard to make that the same for everyone when their campuses are so different.
So there is no legal requirement that the survey be the same for all the schools. And I think the only concern, and the reason why it even came up when we started looking at this policy, was there was a concern that some schools within the system, their tools or their surveys were not as sophisticated as other schools. And so some of the concern was, are we getting an accurate picture of safety within the system where we don't even know if some of these survey tools are effective in getting the information that we need? I think at this point, a lot of the schools that were a little further behind the curve have caught up. And it might be beneficial just rather than having a requirement policy that they use the same questions, but that there be some sort of report for verification of, are the survey instruments sophisticated enough that they're getting the information that they need, so when the data report came out, the climate on their campuses, that you feel like this is valid information and our schools worthy. Because if they don't have that sophistication, we have, I know, all schools always willing to share what they've developed with other schools.
Yeah, I mean, we have some best practice questions where we can say, you know, here are some that we know are rigorous enough that will do the right comparisons. Feel free to use them. I think that would be good.
And I think our CSAOs would bring, I don't know if they know all three CSAOs, but that's they could bring a sample question to a CSAO meeting, I mean a sample survey, and they could compare questions. Yeah. And those that are feel a little underdeveloped, we'd say, here, we'll do this for you. Or here's how we use Qualtrics or whatever, you know, however we can help. But then you could see it, and then maybe the CSAOs can report to this, like we had a calendar of when they're going to be administered at each institution, and then maybe you have four campuses come to this meeting after they've administered to say what they found. Yeah. And have a report. We wouldn't all be, we'll probably not all be on the same cycle, but you could build this into this. Yeah. Then you could verify that we're getting the information, we're acting on the information. We'd be happy to do that.
I think that's important that in the policy that the schools do the climate survey.
Yeah.
Necessarily. Yes. At this point, it's not a federal requirement.
Right.
And there is some changes happening in the regulations that govern Title IX. We don't know what it's going to look like, but I do think it's important that the schools are engaging in it. So I think we're keeping that in the policy would be important, but taking out these other requirements would be a good idea. And then having the CSAOs work together on sharing best practices is probably the appropriate place for that.
Okay.
So, Chair, I would concur with that. Having visions with on an issue, similar issue with DOJ, you know, best practices at least every other year through a survey. And it doesn't really specify the survey, as I understand it, although I'm going to a meeting on this in October, may learn a little bit more. But yeah, it's every other year's best practice available.
So would we have a motion here?
Yes.
Okay, so will you make a motion that we would consider that remove the requirement for comment questions. On the climate survey.
Yeah. And we probably would remove the requirement that everybody be doing it on the same year. Sounds like, I don't know if that's...
And I'm really comfortable with the idea that they're coming back and having follow-up conversations, because I think this, as a system, this, just not just liability, but just student safety on a whole bunch of levels, that this is a conversation that we should be making sure our campuses are having and feeling safe and facilitating and having a conversation where they can share. That's important.
So can we get a motion?
I'll move that we continue the requirement to have a climate survey at each institution to allow them latitude on developing their own questions. I don't know how to word this, but subsequent to any recommendations from our committee as to what questions should be included in that, if there is something we would like to have from each school, I think that would make sense too. So I'd make that motion.
Okay.
And I just want to add, how does that follow-up come with this committee? So there, we know they're going to be out there doing it, how, like, the rotation of them coming and having, once a year, having a conversation, or...
You get a policy language that requires the schools to report back on the outcomes of climate surveys to this committee.
So once a year, we have an agenda item where we just, and not even that they maybe all need to come, but maybe it's just the data.
And my question would be, for the whole climate survey, or would it be just for student safety?
Just Title IX, yeah.
All right, all those in favor?
Regent Prince needs to decide if he wants to add that to his...
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know that we got a second yet, though, did we?
I'll second that. I second that with the addition.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
So I did get some information on the August 16th date. So it is on August the 16th. The room at the Gateway that's scheduled is the EdNet room, so that's our interactive video room, or one of our interactive video rooms. So people can, will structure, in case you want to join by interactive video or phone. It's between 10 and noon, so it's on the new schedule. It's just not on the new schedule day. It's on the new schedule. It's not on the exact date that it should be, but it was enough before the September meeting to allow for meaningful conversation on topics to get ready for the September meeting. So August 16th from 10 to noon at the Gateway EdNet room or virtually, and we'll let you have additional information on how we do that virtually for those who cannot come in person.
What's the title of that meeting?
Between 10 and...
No, not the time. The time, but what are we calling it?
Oh, I don't know what we... It is, we call it the Academic and Student Affairs Committee. But, of course, we call it the ASAC Committee in yes. our office.
Dave's calling them so far committees.
Committee meetings or something. I know. Today I thought I was calling it a work meeting, but I've been calling it between board meeting meetings.
The every other meeting.
Okay. And we'll also, you'll also be getting some Outlook invites for the upcoming ones. So we were waiting on that because we just sent you, while you were here, the details of how the committee operates, on it, and kind of a little welcome letter that has a lot of that in it, including the dates. We thought you maybe wanted to read that before you got your Outlook invites. So Outlook invites will go out on Monday for everything else, but the 16th you've got now.
Okay, any other thoughts?
I have a question. These surveys that you implement at your schools, when do they normally come out? In the middle of the year, at the beginning, the end?
Well, we've done ours in spring.
We do ours in fall. At least it started in 17.
Okay.
It's usually like mid-semester, so it's not as right at the beginning, and it's not right close to finals. We try to thread the needle there. So
okay.
We try to get a second
set. How do you answer that?
It's awesome. Electronic. We had this year, we built it in our Canvas platform, so students, when they logged into the classes, they could see it. They respond to Canvas a lot better than that email.
Definitely. Yeah, I was just curious about the timing of it, because I understand why it would be happening in the middle of the semester. Absolutely, that makes sense. But I'm just wondering if there's a way to increase participation even more, because I think the more data we can get, the better, because this topic is obviously really important. But it would be hard to do at the because I was thinking maybe we could do it that students have to take the survey, or else there's a hold on their account to register, but that would be hard because you don't want to do it that early. So, I don't know.
First meeting, and I know how fast this cycle goes. It just seems like we just get rid of you and then you guys are done. But as far as this committee and the work here, any, you know, what the presidents are thinking, what you're, you know, that you can really, that we can support you in utilizing this year the best of what the agenda and what the issues are to students. So that was just a suggestion of that.
Yes, could you get back with us in the next meeting and just give us a 5-minute update about what the presidents are looking for,
that you represent, or that your issues that you really, I mean, you guys are on the ground, and you guys are always, I say you're 2 years ahead of what we're hearing, so Yeah. Maybe not president.
Yeah.
But I'd be really interested, just so you can hit the ground and you can be supportive of whatever, you know, issues she's wanting to have.
Thank you.
Okay, let's make the adjourn.
Make the motion.
Why
should
I
be more?
You're right.
I'm a guy in motion.
We're in.
Yeah, she fucking went. You say where?
Yeah.
University.
Okay, I don't know where you studied.
I actually created my own major. It's called Integrative Group Science.
Excellent.
Yeah. And what's your position again?
So I'm at Dixie State. I do their government relations work.
Oh, awesome. How long have you been there?
I actually was there for a couple